Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fomet About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived right here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, also on Stitcher and iTunes for your listening pleasure.
Somehow, always after this intro, Chris finishes up, looks at me, I just look at him, and we just can't say anything most of the time. I don't know. We got to get over that hump. We didn't used to do that. All right. So we do have a couple of mostly local announcements. So the first is Brunity. So Brunity is not a homebrew club. It's basically a gathering of all local homebrew clubs and homebrew shops in the New York City area and New Jersey. So how many clubs do we have participating in this event?
At least 10 clubs and stores. I have in the local region. I expect a couple more. We've got at least 35 different beers signed up to be in attendance or showing up and be shared. Yep. We've got a crew of different homebrewing musicians that will be the entertainment for that, as well as a DJ, homebrew DJs, people on the scene, just celebrating New York City homebrew culture.
Yep, and it's a good way to not only support and learn about your local New York City homebrewers, but also try some really good homebrews, and it's all going to benefit City Harvest. So the pouring event is at the Bell House, which is in the Gowanus area of Brooklyn, February 22nd from 1 to 5 p.m., and you can find out more information at brunity.com. That's brewnity.com.
And that is actually the third day of New York City Beer Week. New York City Beer Week is from February 20th to March 2nd, and lots of fun stuff is going to happen. Not just that, but we're having a giant party at the Altman Building, opening party. There's going to be amazing events all around the different bars that generally serve craft beer all year round, but we're going to say it loud for this 10-day celebration. And that's what I have to say about that. Another thing that's going on just before that, or at the beginning of February, Homebrew Alley. If you go to homebrewalley.com, you can sign up to judge or steward. We need your help. But we also, if you want great, amazing feedback, or very valuable and useful feedback on beers that you're making, send it into Homebrew Alley, and it will be judged by BJCP-ranked judges. The deadline for sending things in is January 23rd, I believe?
22nd.
22nd, mm-hmm. For registering and getting it to a drop-off point or mailing it in.
Yep. I also want to give a shout-out to Randall Leeser, who is a local homebrewer and invited us to a homebrew tasting on Friday evening. And he did a bang-up job. First of all, everything was very nicely laid out. We had meats and cheeses and all kinds of yummy snacks and good company. And he poured some great beer. So I thought it was super classy and a lot of fun. So thanks, Randall.
Yeah, thanks, Randall. Speaking of homebrew, also during New York City Beer Week, there is going to be an event that Jimmy Carboni, host of Beer Sessions Radio, is putting it together with Joshua Bernstein, called the Homebrew Jamboree, and I believe it's the third year of this event, and the people, today's guests, will actually have a beer at that event.
Yep. So, Matt Federico and Andrew Berman, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for doing.
Thanks for having us. Welcome to Fomet About It.
So we first met you guys at the last Brooklyn Wort, which I helped judge, and you were pouring. You came in second place. Mm-hmm. It was a very close race, though, from what I remember. That was an outstanding beer. So you poured a Greenwood Saison with rye. So I can remember meeting you guys there and having that excellent beer. So let's start by talking about how you guys got started homebrewing.
Sure.
Matt and I went to college together, so we met probably 7 or 8 years ago. Got really involved into the craft beer scene in Michigan, which is a great place to start.
Where in Michigan were you?
Ann Arbor, University of Michigan. Yeah, go right Blue. So then Matt moved to, I'm from Long Island, Matt moved to Brooklyn after graduating college, and we sort of picked up our love for craft beer. And then I'd say probably 3 years ago, me being the adventurous person I was, I decided to buy a homebrew kit. Didn't do any research into what homebrewing was, but I had the kit, thought it'd be a great idea to try. And of course, I said, doing no research, one Saturday night, maybe 8 o'clock, put some Led Zeppelin on, said, I'm gonna brew some beer.
Great music, man.
Yeah, I figured everything in the kit would have what I needed. Now, of course, also I said, why get a 1 gallon kit when you can get a 5 gallon kit?
I appreciate this attitude very much.
But of course, I quickly learned I don't have even a 5 gallon pot. You know, the sort of first thing you need to learn brewing is if you're brewing 5 gallons of beer, you need at least 5 gallons of water. So that was a miserable failure. And,
wait, can I just ask, what kind of kit was this? Was it all grain extract?
It was an extract. Okay. So, yeah, I didn't do all grain at least. So, put that to the side, put that in the basement for probably about 8 months. You know, in the last few years, the craft beer scene here has really taken off, and we continue to sort of learn about all these new styles of beer. And then Matt sort of approached me, I'd say, and I said 8 months later than that, and said, hey, we should really try this. And I said, well, I really screwed it up the first time. Are you sure you want to do this? And he said, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos. I actually did some research. And we bought another kit, and that was sort of the start of brewing, I'd say probably 2.5 years ago now.
So your entire time homebrewing has been together.
Yes.
That's correct. That's, besides that's that one beautiful. Crazy night by yourself.
Right. Well, that's how we all start with these romantic things.
Yeah.
No, so we both brought something to the table, and, you know, Andrew was always trying to brew new styles, and I'm like, well, you got to think about, like, how actually we're going to do that. So we collaborate well, and it's been a really great ride so far.
As drinking buddies, do you guys have similar palates then, or tastes for beer?
I think we have different palates starting out. So what I brought to the table starting out was we brew at my parents' house on Long Island. So I live in Astoria. Matt lives in Greenpoint, and we drive out once a month or so to brew. So that's what I brought to the table. And to start, we sort of did like every other, right? So someone, hey, I want to do sort of a really cool like piney IPA. And I'm like, I want to do a citrus IPA. And we would sort of switch and collaborate that way. But I think over time, we sort of both understand what we like and try to be adventurous and we'll sort of play off each other. You know, Mal say, oh, I want to try this style. And I say, okay, cool. We'll both do separate research. You know, I think something that we really try to do is understand the base style of that beer. So we bring that and then try to make sort of small adjustments based on our style. But we got to the point where whatever you want to do, let's do it. And we collaborate together. So
in those 3 years, about how many batches do you think you guys have made?
I'd say we average about one a month. So 25 to 30 batches.
Mm-hmm. 120. And they're all 5 gallon batches.
Yeah.
And then you
still within the legal limits, I believe.
Yeah.
you work on Long Island, so you're able to check on the beer.
Yep, I was checking on our rye IPA that's fermenting. It's 2 days into fermentation, so after work, take the 10-minute drive over to my parents' house, check on the beer. If I need to bring up the temperature, spend a few hours bringing that up. So that makes it convenient right now. But,
yeah. And what kind of system are you guys brewing on right now?
The system is my parents' stove.
Okay.
But it's all grain, 5 gallons. We have a freezer chest in the basement, so put the carboy in there. So we have a pretty good system, I think.
And you're using a traditional, you know, like a cooler system?
Yep, we got a 10-gallon cooler.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, mash, lauter time. And
yeah.
So I think that's sort of the biggest thing over the last few years is sort of every few months improving upon the system, right? You know, you start out, you do extracts. Okay, I feel limited in that. Let's switch to all grain, you know, and then that 100 degree day over the summer. Okay, let's get a, you know, a freezer chest.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't stand this no more.
Yeah. And then it was, you know, okay, let's start treating the water, you know, do yeast starters. So we've sort of you know, the steps of improving the process. And I think it's taken us really 2 years to get to the point where we feel good about the consistency and the level of process that we have with our beer. So
Cool. I think that's an important lesson for a lot of people out there.
So yeah.
Be patient, for one. I mean, it's not, I think that sometimes you can make really great beers, but it is definitely a process, even for homebrewers that have been brewing for 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, first of all, there's always new equipment and new materials, but also, and new techniques as well. You know, I mean, nobody knew what hop bursting was probably even 5 years ago. So I think, you know, that is something that's really cool, is to kind of learn, you know, kind of look at benchmarks and what you've learned along the way and your improvements.
Yeah, I think one of the big things for us was let's master or learn as best as we can this stage of the process, right? So it's the first time you're a home brewer, especially now you're like, oh, I want to add coffee, vanilla, you know, chili peppers. Like, let's just learn how to brew first. And we really spent, you know, maybe probably the first 10 batches, probably I'd say a third of the batches we did was just about learning how to brew, right? Mm-hmm. And not really worrying about, you know, just do a good base beer and really learn the process. So I think that's been an important thing for us.
What were some of your first resources? Were in any Bibles?
YouTube.
The YouTube Bible.
Yeah. John Palmer's How to Brew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was big. I'm going through the Brewing Elements series.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm deep in the yeast book right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so much to learn, and that's what's great about the hobby. There's always something new.
Yeah, that is for sure. So talk about this beer that you guys not only took second in Brooklyn Wort with, the Rye Saison, and that you've rebrewed it. So that's what we're drinking in the studio, actually. So tell us, what you guys decide to do a Saison?
We decided to do a Saison because probably our first dozen or so batches, we used a lot of clean, neutral yeasts.
Mm-hmm. Like,
so
American ale yeast.
Yep, yep. A 1056 or... American style beers. So to showcase the hops or the malts, and finally we're like, you know, why, there's more than just water, hops, and malt to beer. So let's try and showcase the yeast. So we went with the Saison, and we heard good things about the 3711.
Mm-hmm. Which is a French Saison yeast.
Correct.
For those of you that are.
Yeah. I love this yeast.
Can't remember those numbers like me. Yeah. Or use a different company.
Yeah. So yeah, we gave it a go. We wanted to mix up a little bit, so we added some rye in there, and we feel like it balanced out the beer really well.
And what was you were talking before the show about using that yeast. So as most of us know that have played with Saisons, that kind of traditional Belgian Saison yeast can often be very tricky. It's usually derived from DuPont, right? No, it's not. That's not what I'm trying to say, is it? Yes. Anyway, the Belgian-style yeast... it's sometimes very tricky. It can stall out on you. Yes. It can,
that is what you're,
you know, throw a wrench in the fermentation process. So talk about using the French Saison yeast.
Yeah, so we made a decision. I think it has a pretty wide range of temperatures that you can ferment at. So we decided to ferment pretty low, around
67, 68 to start.
And something that we learned in the second time of brewing is that really after those first few days, that's where you're going to get the flavor profile of the yeast, and then you need to sort of bump it up to let it finish out. We did not do that the first time, so that was the one we brewed for Brooklyn Wort. So it probably got stuck around 10:30, which was a cool experience for me because I'm checking on it and I would do a gravity reading and I get to sort of taste it and sort of see the different sweetness at the different levels to see how it dries out. So I actually really enjoyed that. But we actually stirred it up and we ended up repitching some yeast and got it down to probably 10:15. So that's the biggest difference between the second time we brewed it, was really managing the temperature during fermentation to get it down to finish, I think.
And that was 3711 that did that.
Yeah.
Did that on
we thought it was, everyone said it's a really hardy yeast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, yeah. But we fermented pretty low. So, I mean, I think it can go up to like 82.
Yeah.
I didn't bring it up at all after the first few days. So I think that was really the issue. I really should have brought it up, you know, mid-70s. So.
Yeah. I've used it a couple times. I've never had to bring it up very much, but I didn't have the option at 508 to bring it up. I had one cold room for 7 fermenters, and, you know, they all had to be around the same thing, and so I had to pick yeast that all worked around 67, 68, and I had some luck with 3711.
But I think it's also going to depend on how much heat your fermentation is generating, because you were talking about, much bigger tanks.
55 gallons. So it's generating its own heat, you know?
Yeah.
And a decent pitch rate, I guess, you know?
I think it's interesting because a lot of, I've tasted a lot of beers. I don't think I've actually used French Saison yeast. I'm hooked on the Belle Saison yeast. But the French Saison yeast, which I don't know, those could be the same. I'm not even sure. But they're not, right?
They're not.
The French Saison yeast, though, I've tasted a lot of beers that people have used it because when it first came out, you know, it was kind of, you know, people really were interested because you don't have to worry about these stuck fermentations as much anyway. And but I think that is one thing. You can get a huge difference in aroma and flavor profile depending on the temperature, you know, of either the entire duration or how you change it up.
Sure. So focusing on fermenting lower, we were going to try and get the peppery, spicy character from it, as opposed to if you ferment higher, you get more of the bubble gum, the fruit.
Like banana-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel the taste differences are from batch to batch?
Yeah.
Your two batches.
Did you save any of that first batch?
Unfortunately, we went through everything.
I can imagine, yes.
It was freaking delicious. It was the very last minute.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot cleaner this time around, probably because the fermentation just went a lot smoother. Mm-hmm. And because it finished a little bit lower, I think the flavors are sharper, more pronounced.
It is pretty bright, I would say. And you do get a nut. Like, I'm getting a lot of fresh fruit, like apple, pear, kind of. A little bit of pepper, right? Mm-hmm. This is a really nice flavor profile, so.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this was bottled probably 7 or 8 days ago. So I would say probably in another week or so, as it finishes out and carbs a little bit more. I think the one that we brought to Brooklyn Warm was very effervescent. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and it does have a little more, I think it has a little heavier body. Yeah. So, which should be explained by violence. The other thing, so how do you feel what do you feel the rye gives to it?
Again, I think it gives a drier, peppery sort of finish to the beer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gets accentuated even more with lower finish in gravity. And when we carb it to a higher level.
Cool. Now, the other day, we're going to take a break, actually, because it is
7:16. We are going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about recipe formulation and your lives of brewing here on Ferment About It. Thanks for listening. Ferment About It.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. We are here in the studio with Matt Federico and Andrew Berman, some of our favorite homebrewers locally. Great team. They won second place, which we also call first loser of Brooklyn Words. But one of the great things and the fun things about that is that is a competition that is both judged and also has a people's choice. And in this weird, rare instance, they apparently paid both teams for the vote, but they got second place in both categories, which was awesome. I've never seen the judges and people's choice line up and as they did. They were all three the same?
No.
The first two were the same.
The first two were the
first
same.
First two.
Yeah. Which was crazy because the guy who won had a Goza and we had a Saison, which I would not think are two of the most popular styles choice.
Right. It's interesting to see how things
are. It was a Goza. It was something else. What was it? Grapefruit Goza?
It was a grapefruit Goza.
Yeah.
Right.
So, hey, we have sophisticated palates here in Brooklyn, New York.
That's right.
Have moved on. I mean.
Well, we're going back, though, too.
Yeah, but speaking of
it's
Gozas.
Cyclical. It's cyclical.
Speaking of Gozas, I was in a bar this weekend, and I think that like a 12-15 tap bar, and there were three Gozas on tap. So we have definitely hit that, you know, odd historical styles that are definitely back and thriving here. Okay, so let's go back to this Greenwood Saison with rye. So, first of all, why'd you guys name it Greenwood Saison?
Well, we named it that because I got engaged a couple weeks before we brewed it, and Greenwood was a location where I proposed to her. Okay. So
nice.
I was going to say, did you get engaged at Greenwood Cemetery? That's
no. So this is back in Michigan.
We have one of the largest cemeteries in New York City is Greenwood Cemetery.
Yeah, a lot of people came up to me at Brooklyn Board. They're like, did you name that after the cemetery? I'm like, sorry, man.
It is a very cool historical cemetery. I actually went to a play there one night. But anyway.
As one does. Yeah.
But you never know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Someone would get engaged. I think they did. They have had some interesting events there. All right, so let's go. Sorry, I keep my mind in. Is all over the place.
It certainly is. So, never mind. So you guys have brewed once a month for 3 years. One of the fun things about homebrewing is not having to repeat a recipe, but you guys are repeating recipes. And why?
There's a few we really liked. I think that was actually the first repeat beer we did was a Goza that Matt came up with, a rhubarb Goza.
Nice.
So that was probably the first beer that we were like, this is awesome. We need to do this again. And it's seasonal, so that really worked out well. I think a few others, just, you know, as you start to really like a certain beers, you want to brew them again and just to sort of... I think as much as you want to try something different, you also want to reach some sort of level of as close as you can to
Absolutely.
Perfection. So, you know, we try to do... This year, we've already done 2 repeats, but we know we want to do something new next.
It's January 12th.
And we've done...
How many
we've done 2 beers already, right?
In the 12 days? Awesome.
One. No, sorry. One and one right before the New Year.
Okay, right.
Talk about your rhubarb goes. What was your approach to the Gosa?
Well, first of all, I really love rhubarb. I make pies with it, and it's just been a part of my life growing up. I had a grandpa that made pies, and so it was always great to have him bring like a stack of 4 rhubarb pies.
Is your grandfather Charlie Papazian?
He's not.
Okay. Just check.
Charlie Papazian is also a pie baker. Anyway.
Oh, excellent.
Well, he loves pies, and for his birthday, he used to teach school, and he'd have his kids tell their parents that, you know, they should bring pies to school, and then he just created National Pie Day. And while we're on the subject, Bitter and Esther's is having an event, a pie and beer event on January 23rd in honor of Charlie Papazian and his birthday, and is donating some of the proceeds from that to Charlie's favorite charity. That should be fun.
But back to rhubarb.
your grandfather.
Yes. So ever since we started brewing together, I was like, yeah, I gotta do something with rhubarb, you know? But it took over a year for me to realize, wrap my head around, well, what do I actually do with it? You know, there's not too many. I read all the forums online, and there's not too many people who are talking about putting rhubarb in beers. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while, but I landed on a Goza, and I thought it would. The rhubarb, Goza has some acidity, some tartness to it. So I figure, well, rhubarb without all the sugar that you put into a pie together, it's really tart on itself. So decided to do a Goza. It's got the salt, the coriander, and I just put a bunch of rhubarb in it.
When?
Secondary.
Secondary?
Yeah. So
it's a long and terrible process to... add the rhubarb, but
so we
awesome.
Added 12 pounds of rhubarb
in a five gallon batch.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot. Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we got all the acidity from the rhubarb. We didn't pitch any lacto or anything.
Right.
Like
no acidulated malt. Just
nope.
That.
Because we awesome. Weren't at that point in our in our
well,
brewing
career. The thing is, though, I don't actually think you need to be. I mean, that's a good example of deriving acidity from and you know that texture flavor from something else entirely.
Sure.
So
we did get the acidity from it, and also in the end product sort of had like a grapefruity taste to it as well, so it added a lot of complexity that I didn't even realize was gonna give. Plus it's a really nice color too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
If only you brought it to Brooklyn Board.
We did that for the first round.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
But
we
didn't have enough to do the event.
And it's our seasonal homebrew.
Oh nice.
What did you prep the rhubarb in any way? So, besides washing it, obviously.
Washed it. I froze it because I you know, bought it in June, and mm-hmm. I don't know when we first time we brewed it was in January, I think.
Yeah.
So froze it, and I read that that breaks up the cells, so a better flavor. What do you call it? Transfer into the beer.
Did you chop it up? Dice it up?
Yep, chopped it up.
We put it through a food processor.
Yep. Oh. To like give more surface area.
Yeah. So when it came out, was it more like, was it a slush or was it just kind of like a finely diced?
It's like a slush.
A slush, okay.
And we actually then transfer it to a tertiary
to clean it all
clean
up.
It out.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense.
Which I'm sure is not the best practice, but we haven't had any adverse results to it at this point.
I think as long as you're careful with sanitation and your racking practices.
And you're drinking it fast for any oxidation if it happens. Right.
Yeah, we've been pretty lucky with no oxidation issues. And now that's actually another lesson we learned in process is we purge all of our carboys if you go to secondary with CO2.
Yeah.
But it's lasted a while. I still have one in my fridge and it still has a really nice taste to it.
Awesome. So you guys are pouring your rye IPA at Josh Bernstein's event at Jimmy's Number 43. So this is your third rebatch, and we actually had this dry hop with Galaxy Hops.
The one they're serving is the second batch.
The third batch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the one you're serving is the third batch. Yeah. What we tasted yesterday was the second batch.
Yeah.
And what are the differences between the three batches?
Yeah, what have you learned through the process?
Well, between batch one and batch two, we decided to up the rye because we really liked what it brought to the beer. And then also we did switch up some of the hops, dry hopping between batch one and batch two. Batch one, we did a mix of Amarillo and Galaxy. Second batch, we did straight Galaxy. But I think we're probably going to go back to a mix.
I think it plays
better with the rye.
Yeah, I think the biggest things from one and two were we have our water profile, so we treat our water now. And with the second batch, so we brewed a double IPA a few months ago, and I actually broke a carboy as I was cleaning it, preparing it for secondary. So we put it in a larger 6.5 gallon carboy, and just sort of cross my fingers and hope it wouldn't oxidize, and it did. So since we don't keg, we decided we bought a CO2 tank regulator, and now we purge all of our carboys. So that was a huge difference, I think. I think it really helped in sort of bringing out the aroma of the Galaxy on the second batch. So,
and also we moved to yeast starters in between the year that we rebrewed. So there's a lot of things that I think have really made the beer better.
So when you're dry hopping, are you adding your hops and then purging and then?
We purged the tank, added the hops, and then racked on top of it.
Okay.
For secondary.
Then give a little extra.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Simon Tepes, who makes really awesome award-winning pale ales and IPAs, I don't know if you guys know him or have had. Anyway, he's won many other competitions. But he always purges his hops with CO2 and then, you know, the keg and everything. Mm-hmm. And I do think that can make a difference.
Yeah, we've just started like purging everything, whatever. Yeah. It's just
it's kind of addicting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just makes you feel safer too.
Yeah.
More secure. And obviously if you guys are seeing the results then, you know.
Yeah.
So then how about the third batch?
So the third batch we brewed a week ago.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much a straight rebrew. We really liked it.
Same malt base as batch two with the upped rye.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and we sort of just really liked it, and we just needed to brew it for the event.
So it's fermenting right now. We still have time to decide what we want to do for the dry hopping.
Yeah. Right, right, exactly.
I think I'm hoping it will probably finish out a little bit better since we've sort of learned a little bit more about temperature control during fermentation a little bit more. But besides that, it was the exact same recipe for the third time. We'll switch the dry hopping, but
cool. So what do you guys? What do you see for 2015?
2015, I hope to continue to do a few more events. I think really in the last years, we've sort of focused on networking in this awesome local NYC beer scene to continue to do that. I said as long as we feel good about what we're brewing and we want to share it and learn from people, and that's really all we want to do is share beer and continue to talk to people. I mean, I said I can talk about beer all night, so to find people that want to do that is really cool.
You guys are members of two clubs, right? The Dive Bar Homebrew Symposium?
Yeah. Yep. Well, I'll have to call that a symposium, not a club, because I know they're...
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
two gathering
and then Brooklyn Bruisers, who we met through actually a Josh Bernstein homebrew tour that we went on and started talking to everyone. They said, hey, we're all in Bruisers. And we're so, why aren't we in the Bruisers?
Especially me living in Greenpoint. It's like, oh. It's
such, yeah, that's.
Why not? Why haven't we done this before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had the Bruisers on, several Bruisers on the show, and then Chris and I go pretty regularly.
Yeah, so. And they're great guys to talk to and just learn from.
And girls, there's a few. Yes, there's a few girls. Ladies.
Yes, but I think that's really what I want to do. Just learn from people. There's still so many different types of beers that we want to do. I think our next batch is going to be our first Berliner Weiss.
Yeah.
You know, just keep exploring and learning about different styles. I think that's the fun thing, to just continually improve upon your process and make good beer.
Now, if you guys come across, do you use kind of commercial beers as inspiration sometimes?
Sure.
And now, like, if you come across a beer, you know, then do you guys, you know, make sure the other person has it, or...
Yeah, I think that's the best thing, is doing the research part of
homebrew development. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, hey, let's do a Berliner Weiss. Okay, let's go to the store and let's each buy, you know, eight different beers of that style and see what we like. That's how we sort of did our oatmeal stout, you know, just buy up as many different styles like that, and then buy as many different we added cold brew coffee, so hey, let's buy different cold brew coffee and spend a day doing different ratios, and yeah, so... A lot of drinking involved in the research, and that's great.
That's cool, though. I think that's a great way of, you know, developing. So, one last thing. So, how are you guys developing your recipes together? Are you doing it in person, online? Do you emails back and forth? Do you have any, you know?
It's probably all of the above. It depends. Sometimes one of us will have an inspiration, and we'll write a recipe. Then we'll bounce it off each other, mm-hmm. and... then really just try to figure out what flavor we're going for and then build up from there. So sometimes we'll have different suggestions, or it's a good working relationship, and I would
I think we got to the point where we sort of both understand what we like, so it's really easy to sort of, you know, until you sort of go online and you start looking at the same things, so we'll come back and be like, oh yeah, we both read the same article, so we have the same base idea. And then I think Matt's really good at sort of learning how to finish out a recipe, so I always will defer to him on that. So, yeah. But I think one of the things about homebrewing, too, is it's like you have to really plan out. I said, we're only brewing once a month. So sometimes, especially with the rebrews, it's like, well, we waited a whole year to rebrew it. So, you know, you have to take really good notes.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. The brewing notebook is key, whether it be digital or in paper or whatever.
Yep. Agreed.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for sharing your beers and doing it. Absolutely. Keep it up.
Good luck with the Berliner. I look forward to trying that at some point.
So. Yes.
Awesome. Well, that's it for tonight on Ferment About It. We'll be back next Monday live 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Andrew Berman, Matt Federico, thank you very much. Ferment About It.
The Ferment About It's theme song is provided by Chris Kuzme.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.